Lucas Tronche, known to his family and friends as highly intelligent and endlessly curious, was a quiet, compassionate, and diligent leader. His deep-rooted passion with scouting and survivalism, as well as his devotion to helping others, was cut short by an unexplainable, unsolved disappearance in the late afternoon hours of March 18th, 2015. Leaving all who knew him across his hometown of Bagnols-sur-Cèze of Gard, France, grasping for answers in a sea of evidence that drowned us all in doubt. As a hope to provide more substantial reasoning built upon observable evidence and situational analysis, this is an examination of the disappearance of Lucas Tronche and the mysterious lack of clues left behind. This is Cold Case Detective. Lucas Tronche was born on April 18th, 1999, to parents Eric and Nathalie Tronche in the Gard department of southern France. Lucas joined three older brothers, all integral parts to the close-knit Tronche clan, with a younger brother born a few years later. To support a quickly growing family, both Eric and Nathalie secured engineering jobs with the French Alternative Energies and Atomic Energy Commission. The complex work turned over a steady income for the Tronche couple and allowed for a comfortable youth for both Lucas and his siblings. At a young age, Lucas displayed a natural gravitation towards the outdoors, the natural world, and all living things in general. He loved spending time out in the open air, learning as much as he could about the environment around him and the earth at large. When he was just a young lad, Lucas became a junior scout as an extracurricular activity and began a multi-year scouting journey that would last into his teenage years. Through scouting, Lucas learned basic survival skills and wilderness wisdom. He also gained vital life skills such as the importance of charity and volunteering, civil servitude, and responsibility. Lucas was a natural scout, born to guide others while constantly finding it in himself to make himself proud, never disappointing his parents, teachers, or instructors. Despite his tireless work ethic and devotion to scouting, Lucas was considered a very well-rounded child, balancing education with his various interests. While he wasn't the most talkative kid, Lucas did enjoy competing in sporting events with fellow teammates, especially badminton. Alongside his brothers, Lucas was also an avid swimmer. While it wasn't his absolute favourite pastime, he did attend swimming courses throughout his youth and into adolescence, refining his athletic prowess. And to top it all off, Lucas's determination and undying pursuit to be great brought him success no matter what endeavour he was given, earning him well-deserved confidence in all he accomplished. Considering Lucas spent most of his time playing sports or going on adventures with fellow scouts, many figured he would be an extremely outgoing, extroverted teenager. But in fact, he was anything but. Many friends and family around the 15-year-old boy described him as introverted, keeping to himself as he ventured out into the world. Lucas wasn't displaying a cold shoulder, though. Many of Lucas's closest confidants said Lucas was intrinsically connected to all living things, including other people. He cared deeply about his brothers, his parents, and his friends at school. He was quick to look out for those in need, and never shied away from sacrificing time to assist someone on their training or special project. Lucas's compassion and natural empathy was best exemplified through his connection and passion for animals, spending his last few years researching biology and prepping for veterinarian school post-graduation. He entered his first year at the three-year French high school system with the tri-perfect plan. Scouting, swimming, and science would provide goals and professional development throughout his last few years of schooling, and would launch him into his dream career as an adult. Everything was set up perfectly, until one afternoon's series of mysterious events changed forever the trajectory of Lucas's promising life. Let's now turn to a timeline of events that led up to Lucas's baffling disappearance. A couple of months into 2015, sometime in the middle of February, Lucas Tronche finds newfound troubles going to sleep. He tosses and turns in the night, as observed by his father, Eric. As the month of February wears on, the Tronch family leaves their home in Bagnols-sur-Cèze for a ski trip in the mountains. Despite it being one of Lucas's favourite vacations, he acts particularly melancholy whilst away, again noticed by his father Eric, when Lucas barely eats anything for a couple of days in a row. However, Lucas's appetite returns 2 days into the trip, and the family goes about the vacation as normal. Fast forward a month later, on Saturday, March 14th, and Lucas spends the day with extended family members, including a cousin he rarely gets to see, but loves hanging out with. That night, through Sunday, March 15th, Lucas joins his scout troop for a weekend camping getaway, independent of adults. When he returns that Sunday evening, Lucas tells his father that he had a great time, and was overall delighted with the experience, back to his jovial, optimistic self in the eyes of Eric. The following school week begins, and on Monday and Tuesday, March 16th and 17th, Lucas attends school per usual, without any hassle. On the evening of March 17th, Lucas participates in his weekly badminton training at Coubertin Gymnasium. Neither the other athletes nor Lucas's instructors notice anything askew that Tuesday. Again, he returns home in a superior mood and tells of his excitement to Eric before bed. The following morning of Wednesday, March 18th, 2015, starts out like any other. The weather is clear and pleasant for the incoming spring season. The Tronch family all awakes by sunrise and engages in their daily routine, getting dressed, eating breakfast, and preparing for school or work. Eric and Natalie round up their three sons who are still living at home, 15-year-old Lucas, 17-year-old Valentin, and 10-year-old Arthur. At precisely 7:45 a.m., Natalie drops Lucas off in front of school on her daily drive to work. He makes his way to class and throughout that morning does his routine coursework, showing no signs or signals of distress or that anything is out of the ordinary. His peers find him in good spirits and quite happy. At around 12:20 p.m., Lucas returns home from his studies and eats lunch in the kitchen. He is joined by Annick, the nanny of the youngest Tronch brother, Arthur. Annick tells Lucas that Arthur is invited to a friend's birthday party that afternoon, but that Valentin doesn't want to accompany her to Columbia, the residential where the party is taking place, and only a few kilometers from their home. Lucas agrees to join her and Arthur at the party, and they prepare to leave. A few minutes later, Annick points Lucas to a 20-euro note on the counter left behind by Natalie so they might buy a gift for Arthur's friend. On their way to the party, Lucas buys a gift worth 7 euros and pockets the remaining 13. Between 1 p.m. and 2:45 p.m, Lucas attends the birthday party with his brother Arthur, again showing no hints that something is amiss. Around 3 p.m, Lucas returns home. A few minutes after their return, Annick goes home by herself, leaving Lucas with his brother Valentin, who busies himself playing on the family's computer. About an hour later, at 4 p.m, Lucas comes downstairs from his bedroom for a snack. He then goes outside and sits by himself while doing something on his phone. Valentin watches him through the window, but cannot discern exactly what Lucas is doing. The family's phone provider said his mobile data is accessed around this time, including the popular photo messaging service of the time called Snapchat. However, it's unknown if this is exactly what Lucas is using during his snack break. Another hour passes, and at around 5:05 p.m, Lucas and his brother Valentin get ready for their evening swim class at the public swimming pool. They usually take a bus from an Eggard bus stop on the other side of the Schumann Bridge near their home, getting to the bus stop via kick scooters. However, Lucas is behind in his preparations, despite Valentin's efforts to hurry the brothers along, considering they usually leave at 5 p.m. sharp and are running late. Valentin gives one final warning, telling Lucas he has to get moving, to which Lucas replies saying he'll lock up the house and meet Valentin at the bus stop in a few minutes. This is the last confirmed point of contact and sighting of Lucas Tronch. At 5:10 p.m, Valentin leaves Lucas behind, and CCTV footage captures him walking across the Schumann Bridge by himself, his brother nowhere in sight. It is assumed that at just about the same time, or a few moments after, Lucas leaves his swimming gear behind, retrieves a backpack with a few items inside, and closes up the Tronch residence. At 5:14 p.m, someone, most likely Lucas himself, turns off his cell phone. Sometime between 5:15 and 5:30 p.m, one of the Tranches' closest neighbours, a woman by the name of Madeline, spots a young man walking by the front of her home, dressed in a beige, grey jacket, heading in the opposite direction of the swimming pool, bearing a slight resemblance to Lucas. At 5:30 p.m, Valentin gives Lucas a ring as the bus is about to pull away from the curb. The phone goes straight to voicemail, but Valentin heads to practice anyway, assuming that Lucas doesn't want to attend that day and is staying behind, possibly feeling unwell. Another 30 minutes go by, and at around 6 p.m, Natalie returns home from work with Arthur. She finds the doors locked and the interior empty. 2 hours pass, and at 8 p.m, Natalie drives to the Eggard bus stop to pick up Lucas and Valentin, but arrives only to find Valentin. He tells his mother that Lucas hadn't shown up for swimming practice and assumed Lucas just missed the bus and decided to stay home instead. Natalie tells Valentin that she'd been home the last 2 hours and saw no sign of Lucas. She then calls the local accident and emergency departments to check and see if maybe Lucas got in an accident and was admitted to a nearby hospital. When this fails to turn up results, she instead contacts various friends of Lucas, but none of them have any useful information. Finally, Natalie makes a report to the police, and they immediately launch a missing persons investigation. At 11 p.m, Eric returns home from work and learns of Lucas's disappearance. He joins the investigative efforts as a manhunt begins. Nothing noteworthy pops up on law enforcement's radar until the following day, when at around 12:15 p.m. on Thursday, March 19th, a 35-year-old neighbour by the name of Stephanie spots a young man dressed in red running across her front yard while she irons. She tells police that the man was running in the direction of the vineyards and happens to only be about 500 metres from Madeline's sighting the previous afternoon. Stephanie describes the young man as slender with fair-coloured hair and mentions her intrigue at the idea of a young lad running by his lonesome. A cadaver dog is sent to that exact location later on, but can only track the running man's scent for about 1 kilometer north. Later that day, at around 6:30 p.m. on March 19th, a close family friend of Eric and Natalie Tranche, a man by the name of Rachid Gamri, joins volunteers as they canvass the areas around Bagnol. During their search, Rachid sees a unique shape at the top of a rocky peak up ahead in the distance. He alerts the group, and they all decide that the shape is the silhouette of a person standing atop the formation. Rachid attempts a photograph, but because the sighting happens at dusk, the lighting is too dark to identify the figure. Instead, Rachid and the others scream Lucas's name and walk closer to the rocky formation. However, as they advance, the figure stands up and walks away, disappearing into the twilight. Over the following days of the initial disappearance, French soldiers and a combined 1,500 search and rescue volunteers patrol a 4-kilometer radius surrounding the Tranche residence and the River Cers. This includes countless cadaver dogs, professional underwater divers, and helicopters equipped with both night and thermal vision capabilities. These efforts are followed by a massive social media campaign, pleading for the public to help keep an eye out for Lucas, as well as a healthy distribution of missing person posters. As one of the first forensic methods used in the hunt for Lucas, detectives use luminol to clear the Tranche household of any blood or DNA evidence left behind after a few more days of investigating. The luminol reveals slight traces of blood near Lucas's bed. But those traces are brought in for further examination to make sure the traces are in fact blood and not other cleaning chemicals. Before the month ends, at 10:30 a.m. on Monday, March 23rd, a group of search and rescue volunteers claim they spotted Lucas in the hills, above St. Gervais, watching the vineyard workers before bolting into the woods, similar to the Rocky Peak sighting made by Rachid Gamri. Later that same day, investigators received their most peculiar sighting lead when at around 5 p.m. on March 23rd, an anonymous 24-year-old man rides his motorcycle and sees a lonesome teenager walking along the deserted paths around Bagnols-sur-Cèze, holding a rucksack heading towards Espresen, a small hamlet. This unidentified man, an experienced cannabis user, knew that marijuana plants were hidden around these pathways and wondered if the teenager knew it too. The motorcyclist keeps watching the boy as he rides behind him, but eventually turns around when the teenager takes a different path and walks out of his view. 2 days later, on Wednesday, March 25th, the same anonymous motorcyclist walks into a bakery and sees Lucas's photo on a missing persons flyer posted inside. He immediately connects Lucas's profile to the identity of the lonesome teenager and alerts police. Police bring in the man for questioning, but the tip provides no major findings. Another few days pass, and on Saturday, March 28th, law enforcement receives one final sighting after a teenage boy and his father call in to report potentially spotting Lucas during an afternoon stop in Les Pontettes of Valcus. They say a boy appearing to be Lucas was accompanied by an older woman of about 45 to 50 years old, but police investigate and claim the lead is a dead end. It doesn't take long before law enforcement decides Lucas's disappearance is most likely a kidnapping incident, and on March 30th, the district attorney opens an official judicial investigation revolving around abduction and/or illegal confinement. These theories revolving around foul play are agreed upon the following month, in April of 2015, by Lucas's parents, Eric and Natalie, who tell reporters their son displayed no signs of running away, mental illness, or suicidal thoughts, and are convinced a kidnapper is involved. This launches a campaign of multiple television appearances by the parents, pleading with the public and viewers all over the world to join them in the search for their son. 6 months later, in October of 2015, detectives receive what they think is a major break in the case, when the Tronche family starts finding a series of letters addressed to them from an anonymous sender, who writes to inform them that Lucas is in good health and that they shouldn't worry. These letters continue until the following summer, when on July 12, 2016, the writer and sender is caught on CCTV at the sorting office submitting another letter. Police move in to arrest the sender and find he is a 57-year-old mythomaniac from Valence with absolutely zero connection to the case. The man is still incarcerated and sentenced to prison for at least 1 year. The last major clue uncovered by detectives occurs in December of 2016, 21 months after Lucas disappeared. The National Police of France unveil a composite sketch of a man who had been seen by witnesses walking past the Tronche's house the day he went missing. The man is described as 5 foot 6 inches, in his 40s, bald, with tattoos on each forearm. The sketch brings in hundreds of tips, but nothing of use over the next 9 months, so the police sketch is refined in September of 2017. Just over a year later, in the middle of October 2018, police finally apprehend the suspect depicted in their sketch and bring him in for questioning. They discover the man resides in Bagnols-sur-Cèze, the very town where Lucas lived, and was around the bus stop in question the day Lucas went missing, but otherwise has no discernible ties to the disappearance, and the tattooed man is let go. This is the last major update in the case thus far, despite renewed search efforts, yearly vigils held on the anniversary, and an entire non-profit organization being dedicated to finding Lucas Tronche. In a case as detailed and extensive as Lucas Tronche's disappearance, there are hundreds of points we could inspect, analyze, and dissect. However, there is one incident that keeps catching our eye. An incident related to the tattooed man we just mentioned, seen by a neighbouring witness riding a bike in front of the Tronche residence and then arrested 2 years later after his police sketch made rounds through the public consciousness. While the overarching scenario involving the tattooed man has been laid out by police, there are a few fuzzy details that need explaining. First and foremost, it was revealed after the tattooed man's arrest that he was a resident of Bagnols and lived in the area both before and during the height of the investigation. With this in mind, how could it have taken over 2 years to find a man with such iconic descriptors, such as a short stature, a bald head, and specific tattoos on each forearm? It seems like a long time to miss such a character when he's walking around in broad daylight for years on end, just feet from where Lucas was last seen. With that being said, it can be argued that a man who just so happened to be walking through Lucas's neighborhood could be nearly anyone, and could have been just passing through the area, meaning the man seen that morning isn't the same man found by authorities 2 years later. We must assume that they questioned their tattoo man in October of 2018 to make sure he was in Banyal on March 18th, 2015, but if he lived in the area, of course the answer would be yes. There are reports that the tattooed man seen outside of the Tranches' home was also seen at the Egard bus stop before Lucas and Valentin took the coach to swimming practice. There exist CCTV cameras around this area. It seems odd that with the technology available, authorities weren't able to apprehend the man sooner. The strange timing isn't the only thing amiss with the tattoo man's story, though. A year after Lucas went missing, the French news site Objectif Garde published a four-part piece detailing the investigation. In their research, they discovered that the neighbor's tip about the tattooed man was at first considered with little importance, despite the fact that a print shop owner had a very strange and unsettling encounter with a potential connection a few months after Lucas disappeared. Objectif Garde interviewed the printer, who gave the following statement, paraphrased and translated from French to English. In either May or June of 2015, a tall, thin, dark, short-haired man entered the print shop. He sported tattoos on both arms and rode in on a motorbike, a detail that stood out because he set his helmet by the entrance door. This man wasn't necessarily clean, but rather sweaty and unkempt. He told the print shop employees that he worked as an animator in a retirement home, and that night there was a lotto taking place. Thus, he wanted to make A3 posters of Lucas's missing person poster in addition to coloured flyers to pass out at the event. The print shop made 30 and 50 of each, respectively. However, what was odd about the ordeal is that out of the hundreds of posters they made for various relatives and business owners, the tattooed man was the only one who wanted A3 posters and flyers specifically. When the print shop charged the man €35, he claimed his father, a certain Monsieur Durand, who worked at the Banyol Town Hall, would visit the print shop the following day to pay the fee instead. However, the next day, no one came to offer payment. In fact, the print shop called the Banyol Town Hall and discovered they had no employees by the name of Mr. Durand, and he likely never existed at all. The tattooed man himself never returned. At first glance, this exchange seems peculiar, yet unimportant. That is, unless you consider the fact that he isn't the only man on a motorcycle with double arm tattoos associated with the case. It begs the same question asked by the editor at the Objectif Garde. Why was this man printing posters using such a unique format? And why for a lotto at a retirement home? Why did he lie to the print shop about his father? Was it because he simply couldn't afford the €35, or was it purposeful to avoid any tracing? Was he the same tattooed man seen by the neighbour, or the same tattooed man arrested by police in 2018? And if so, did detectives question him about this incident? It is possible, but according to the police sketch statistics and the print shop owner's testimony, this tattooed man was tall, whereas the original tattooed man was described as short. And finally, why did this mysterious motorbiker care so much about Lucas? Is he an actual suspect, or just an unruly but overall innocent and concerned citizen? It is impossible to tell, but questioning this strange and shadowy figure could be the key to breaking the case wide open. Let's now turn to the most prominent theories in the unsolved disappearance of Lucas Tranche. Before the District Attorney's Office and surrounding law enforcement agencies investigated Lucas's disappearance as a kidnapping, many wondered if Lucas had run away from home of his own accord. He was certainly old enough and had the skills and knowledge to survive on his own in the wilderness from years of scouting. One of Lucas's favourite television programmes was Man vs. Wild, the survivalist reality show about living in various climates with only the elements at your disposal. Of course, thinking a 15-year-old teenager would attempt to do what a team of professional videographers and television hosts does just because he liked watching them on television is quite far-fetched. And Lucas wasn't naive. But if Lucas was at least a bit inspired by their incredible feats, combined with his love for nature and scouting, he may have felt the urge to try it for himself. Remember, the weekend before he went missing, Lucas spent a few days on a retreat with his fellow scout troops, which may have been the trigger for a try at surviving the great outdoors alone. That being said, there are some clear signs that Lucas did not journey out of Banyol with the intent to live off the land. While a couple of his things were missing, Lucas left behind most of his scouting gear, including his field knife. According to the Tronch parents, Lucas never went on a scouting mission, camping, or really anywhere outside of school without his knife. Lucas understood this to be the most valuable tool, and to leave it behind would be a severe lapse in judgment and very out of his character, especially if he were on a quest to survive in the wilderness. Other items left behind were his sleeping bag, another vital piece of equipment, his ID, and most of his money, around 120 euros. There was no food missing from the Tronch's kitchen, and all of their possessions were found basically as they were. It hasn't been clarified exactly what was taken by Lucas in his small rucksack, but what we do know is it wasn't enough for long-term outdoor survival. It's still possible Lucas went out on his own solo camping excursion. Maybe he wanted to test the extent of his scouting knowledge by leaving with absolutely nothing. The fact of the matter is it goes against everything Lucas displayed in his years of both education and recreation. And although a comforting thought to believe he left of his own volition, it simply doesn't add up. So, if Lucas didn't plan a survivalist mission, is it possible he still left on his own for other purposes? Some believe so. Theorists point to Lucas's peculiar actions in the hours leading up to his disappearance, specifically his time spent outside, away from his brother, busy on his phone in the backyard. People wonder if Lucas may have been in contact with someone, setting up an appointment or rendezvous with a stranger unbeknownst to his family. This is the leading theory of Ratchid Gamry, the family friend we mentioned earlier. Ratchid believed Lucas met someone, either online or in person, and set up a meeting on March 18th. Obviously, whatever happened at that meeting led to Lucas's disappearance. Lucas might have turned his phone off to prevent any distractions or anyone attempting to communicate with him during the appointment, as he was doing so in secret. And if the other person he was meeting intended to kidnap him, he may have instructed Lucas to turn his phone off. But if Lucas had always intended to turn his phone off anyway, why take the phone at all? Lucas may have wanted it on his person just in case something went haywire. But obviously, if things did, he never got the opportunity to turn it back on and use it. Sadly, the phone was one item never recovered, its fate resting with Lucas's as well. There are some complicated facets to this appointment theory. It's actually highly unlikely that Lucas met someone online, as he wasn't a fan of social media and had deleted his Facebook account long before he disappeared. Authorities did pull his laptop and tablet as evidence, and after numerous dissections of his hard drive and internet activity, detectives felt there were no digital or web-related leads to be had. The same can be said about his phone records too. While the physical device is missing, the Tronch's telephone providers did perform a scan of his data both prior to and during the day he vanished. They discovered that Lucas did access his mobile data in the hours before 5:10 p.m. on March 18th, 2015, but what access this was is unknown. They also determined the phone had not been turned on since 5:14 p.m. of the same day, another gloomy and disheartening piece of evidence. Eric and Natalie did not give up hope, and mentioned to police that Lucas did occasionally use the photo message app Snapchat, and may have used that to connect to someone on the 18th. Detectives submitted a request to Snapchat Inc. in the United States to pull his messages from their archive, as Snapchat deletes messages upon arrival on personal devices, but they are stored forever in Snapchat's servers. It took almost a year to retrieve the results, but in early 2016, Natalie informed reporters that the records indicated Lucas did not send or receive a Snapchat message on March 18th, nor was he communicating with anyone out of the ordinary via the app, ending the possibility that he met someone online. Obviously, this doesn't rule out the idea that Lucas met someone in person instead, such as an introduction made by a fellow scout or teammate. However, countless teachers, scout leaders, coaches, family members and friends, along with their parents, were interviewed, and not once did any of them mention Lucas interacting with strangers or even inviting that possibility. It is certainly not impossible, but from investigative practices undergone thus far, it seems very unlikely. That being said, there is one intriguing theory that stems from the idea Lucas left home under bizarre circumstances, and that involves the theory of the missing stones. One of Lucas's many fascinations was geology, collecting stones and precious rocks in his spare time. Natalie mentioned after he went missing that Lucas was known to leave simply to go and gather stones and search the surrounding areas for interesting rocks. She recalled that in December of 2014, Lucas started coming home with these heavy, funny-looking stones, almost magnetic feeling. Lucas told his parents that he thought he found pieces of a meteorite. This compelled him to build a contraption made of string and powerful magnets that aided him in finding and collecting the stones, sometimes picking up similar pebbles of even smaller size. The collection kept growing, and before he knew it, Lucas had discovered kilos upon kilos of the so-called meteorite stones. If that is what the rocks actually were, bits of extraterrestrial mineral, the lot could be worth hundreds if not thousands of euros. In a disappointing twist, Eric Tronche learned the stones were actually just broken pieces of medieval forged slag. While still unique pieces of rock, these stones would in reality only be worth a few euros. However, Lucas might not have been aware of this, and it should be mentioned that some of the strange stones were missing from Lucas's room the day he disappeared. Not only that, but not long before that fateful day, Lucas was sighted at Banyol Street Market in front of a small stand operated by a man selling unique stones. Whether or not Lucas bought these stones or other materials from the mysterious merchant is unknown, and attempts to track him down have been fruitless as the merchant has since abandoned the Banyol Market and presumably left the area entirely. But this does undeniably feel a little suspicious. Before any conspiracies are drawn, it must be stated that the odds are highly coincidental, and that is all it may be, just a coincidence. Yet it does leave a lot to be questioned. What if this is the person Lucas had made an appointment with, as theorized earlier? What if the merchant was grooming Lucas with stories about meteorites, building trust to the point where he could kidnap Lucas under the pretense of taking him with him to find more of these valuable stones? This would also explain why the stones are still missing from Lucas's room, because Lucas was going on what he perceived as a stone-collecting endeavor with the self-proclaimed experts, and that's where things went awry. It's a haunting scenario to imagine playing out, but at least must be considered, as it can't be ruled out until the Banyol stone merchant is found and interrogated. And until this time, a suspect he must remain. Other theories suggest that whatever happened to Lucas was accidental, and not necessarily a result of kidnapping or planned abduction. What if Lucas really did go out in the woods by himself for a camping trip and wound up the victim of a hunting accident? Eric Tronche wondered that himself early in the investigation, and investigators at the Objective Guard followed that theory up, interviewing the president of the Banyol Hunting Organization. The president informed Tony a 2015 boar hunt was indeed extended until March 31st of that year, and there were confirmed shots fired in the woods near the Saduran neighborhood where Lucas lived. However, he also noted that any hunting accident in the area would have left a body behind, as those woods were searched meticulously in the weeks that followed. He also stated that hunters work in pairs, and none of his group members reported anything or failed to return from their excursion. Again, this scenario isn't impossible, but there is simply zero evidence to support it, unless a massive cover-up is underway. Another theory of accidental basis suggests that when Lucas left his home, he was struck by a car, and the driver stashed the body out of plain sight or took off with the body themselves. This theory has actually been embraced by both authorities and Lucas's family more so than the ones we've listed thus far. Initially, it may be hard to reconcile with the idea that a human being could kill another by accident and then hide it or never report it, but it is a more common occurrence than we might like to believe. The driver may not have had insurance or simply panicked when they struck a young boy. Obviously, this is inexcusable behavior and reprehensible beyond a doubt, but it is in the realm of possibility. Detectives did investigate this idea by calling mechanics both in and around Banyol and asking them if they had worked on any damaged vehicles in the 15 days following March 18th that may hint at a hit and run. The query took years to complete and didn't draw any useful leads, but it's possible the driver could have slipped through the cracks by either driving out of the county or by never fixing the car at all, getting rid of it along with Lucas. So if Lucas didn't leave on his own volition and his disappearance wasn't an accident or an accident turned cover-up, what else could explain such an inexplicable vanishing? It's generally agreed upon that Lucas was not abducted from the family home. There were no signs of forced entry, there were no valuables stolen, and, as we stated previously, Lucas did take a few items including his phone and locked the door behind him. For all intents and purposes, Lucas left the house by himself. But what happened right after that could have turned nefarious? If Lucas was kidnapped on his walk around the area, who might have pulled off this scheme? There aren't a ton of famous serial kidnappers or murderers connected to the case, but one prominent name thrown around early on was Nordal Lelandes, a convicted serial killer responsible for at least two deaths and thought to be the killer in two other homicide investigations. Nordal was ruled out of the Tronche case because of an analysis of his cell phone's GPS, which showed he was more than 100 miles away from the area on March 18th. However, he was considered a regular in the public places around Gard and had family members residing near Bagnols-sur-Cèze at the time. Could he have left his phone behind on the day to thwart tracing? It seems unlikely, and seeing as how investigators have completely ruled him out as a suspect, we can say with a degree of certainty that it was not Nordal. Authorities began to worry they had an anonymous serial kidnapper on their hands who had yet to be caught when on March 1st, 2016, almost a year to the day of Lucas's disappearance, a 16-year-old boy by the name of Antoine Zoya went missing from the village of Clarensac, a mere 38 miles from Bagnols. In a similar vein, Antoine left his home in the afternoon around 1:30 p.m. and was last seen buying cigarettes from a tobacco shop in town. He was described as very similar in demeanour to Lucas, and was also majoring in science as a second-year student. However, any connection between the two boys and sharing a potential perpetrator was ruled out in October of 2018, when the decomposed body of Antoine was found hanging from a tree in the abandoned woodlands near Clarensac. Foul play was ruled out after a thorough investigation. If Lucas was kidnapped or killed, his offender did not strike again in the area to the best of our knowledge, his case being the only one of its kind, in accordance with his demographics and time frame in which it happened. But there is someone else within the confines of the case thus far that could be ruled as a suspect, not often discussed when thinking of theories surrounding Lucas Tronche. Remember the man on the motorcycle we discussed during the timeline of events, who had seen a teenage boy walking on a remote path, followed him, and then reported him to police 2 days later when he saw Lucas's missing person poster in a bakery. There may be more about him than what meets the eye. Objective Gard reported in their four-part investigative articles back in 2016 that when this man reported seeing the teenager on March 23rd, he gave details about Lucas to police that not even the missing persons poster provided, describing him in a way that no one else could by just seeing a picture or flyer. The police were initially struck by this, but after questioning the man, they did not seem impressed by his sighting. But our suspicions go beyond just a few peculiar statements. The man's Facebook profile, according to Objective Gard, included numerous eyebrow-raising posts, including photos of the man in the act of using drugs, and public posts about how he desired to be a hired killer. When Objective Gard reached out to him in an attempt to meet and interview him for the story, the man declined, despite a promise of anonymity. He was the only person to have spotted Lucas who declined to do so, despite the fact that, should his testimony be true, he is the last one to see Lucas alive. Now, certainly none of this is grounds for arrest, or even sufficient to come to the conclusion that the man could be a killer. These case points are circumstantial at best. Sure, there are plenty of incidents throughout history of the killer in a murder investigation returning to the scene of the crime, or involving themselves with police or the media for some sick, self-fulfilling purpose. However, it is a rarity. If the man on the motorcycle was culpable in some way, telling the police voluntarily that he saw Lucas would be a catastrophically risky move. That being said, the circumstances are undeniably suspicious. His testimony also raises questions. If that was Lucas out on the abandoned pathways on March 23rd, what was he doing out there for 5 days? How did he survive the 5 nights without shelter, food, or equipment? Hundreds upon hundreds of people were searching for him, looking behind every tree, under every rock in the area surrounding Bagnoles. Yet he was seen walking in broad daylight a mere 10 kilometers from his home. How did he avoid detection by thermal cameras and helicopter patrols, and trained cadaver dogs and soldiers of the French Guard? It simply doesn't line up. Maybe the man on the motorcycle did see a teenage boy and attributed his identity to Lucas after putting the pieces together incorrectly upon seeing Lucas's flyer. Or maybe his testimony really is the truth. Maybe he truly did follow Lucas into the wilderness. Until we know for certain, it must at least be considered, included with the numerous other theories swirling around Lucas Tronche's seemingly never-ending case file. Before we divulge our hypothesis of Lucas Tronche's unsolved disappearance, we want to make it known that our conclusions presented in Cold Case Detective are purely logical speculation based on evidence, circumstance, and factual subtext. We are only privy to the same information presented in each episode, and we do not attempt to promise certainty or an expert guarantee on the findings we reach in closing. We simply observe, research, and report. In the case of Lucas Tronche, we believe that Lucas did intend to leave his house that evening of March 18th, 2015, but not as a test of his survival skills or a whimsical camping trip gone haywire. Rather, when looking at Lucas's behavior in the weeks leading up to his disappearance, the signs point in the direction that Lucas was struggling with something, albeit silently. His parents have spoken at length about how Lucas was a happy teenager with a lot of positivity and hope, with a bright future he was excited about, and we do not want to discredit those beliefs or undermine the two people that knew Lucas the best. However, it bears mentioning that too often, teenagers struggle with emotional distress or mental illness without even showing a symptom. Sadly, this is a byproduct of the world we live in which young people, perhaps young boys especially, are told to hide their true feelings, to act tough, and to never be vulnerable. While we're not saying this is how Lucas was taught or raised, the present culture constantly unloading unfair expectations on teenagers and adolescents has to be considered. The comments made about Lucas struggling to sleep and finding things he once found enjoyable and fun to be lackluster or disengaging are concerning to hear. Lucas may have been dealing with depression or an unspoken anxiety, and just hidden it well around his friends at school or coaches at practice. The outdoors and scouting may have been his solace, and thus camping provided relief from emotional distress. Natalie Tronche did say that he liked to go on walks, and if combined with his love of collecting stones, that may have been the escape he sought after that fateful evening. Even with this in mind, there is not enough evidence to make an affirmative conclusion about what happened after he walked outside of his house. Lucas's behavior was not medically diagnosed, and to say for certain that Lucas was suffering from depression would be based on circumstantial readings. Of course, it is possible that he left with the intent not to return. He didn't run away to start a new life, but perhaps to end his own. Maybe that is why he took his precious stones with him, as those are what comforted him and brought him joy. It is a devastating theory, but one that is worth consideration. With that said, it is simply a theory, and there is no proof that Lucas is dead, and the chance he is still alive remains the same. It is also possible Lucas was taken by someone the day he disappeared. Who that could be is impossible to say, as the list of suspects is infinite at this point. Was the Bagnoles rock merchant involved? What about the tattooed man from the print shop? What about the man on the motorcycle, theoretically the last person to see Lucas alive? We could run in circles for the rest of our lives, trying to play a game of Clue and draw up potential suspect lineups from case points already cleared by police. Instead, we must remain vigilant in seeking out new clues and continuing to spread the word, sharing Lucas's photo whether it be in France or Europe or anywhere in the world. At this time, all avenues must remain open, as the road to finding Lucas has yet to form a dead end. As we walk along that path, seeking answers to bring justice for the Tronche family, it's important to honor Lucas's memory the way he deserves. Lucas was a shiny example of promising and precious life. He took each step with purpose and intention, finding the beauty of the natural world and balancing that with schooling and loving friendships and family relationships. Lucas knew how to make others smile, even if he didn't feel like smiling himself. He was a brilliant student, on track to be a brilliant veterinarian. His connection to animals and Mother Nature showed his sensitivity, a heartfelt passion not always seen in people of his young age. Lucas Tronche did not let the world persuade him from chasing his dreams. Throughout his life, he took what mattered most to him and did everything in his power to make it better. Deep down, that is who he was. Person endlessly striving to make the world a better place. People, pets, plants, or even a pebble strewn on an abandoned track, Lucas was there to find the value in everything. We will not remember Lucas as a missing person's case, but as a human, infinitely radiating hope, love, and life. With Lucas's incredible gift for finding beauty in everything in mind, we wanted to close today by saying that if you are struggling with anything in life, be it emotional, mental, or physical, it is okay to reach out to someone and talk about the conflictions or distress you might feel. Mental illness and emotional well-being is too often stigmatized, and it is important to recognize that it is human to deal with these struggles. You are not alone and never will be alone, and we as a collective need to be there for each other if we are to make a change. Life and happiness are worth fighting for. On a similar note, if you know anyone who might be struggling with inner turmoil, even if it's the slightest signs or the subtlest of clues, reach out to them and ask them how they are doing. You never know when someone could need that one person to pick them up. A kind word or a friend to listen can make an incredible difference. Above all, remember that your life is valid. No matter where you are right now, you'll find a way forward and be all the stronger for weathering the storm. This is Cold Case Detective. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Cold Case Detective podcast. Should you wish to delve deeper into the mystery, you can follow the case file link included in the show notes, which contains important photographs, documents, maps, and further reading relevant to the case. If you would like to support the show, you can do so by leaving a 5-star rating wherever you listen. It really helps us expand our reach and bring awareness to the cases we cover. If you would like us to investigate a specific case, perhaps even one close to home or that of a loved one, please fill out the submission form in the show notes. Thank you for listening, and I'll see you in a fortnight with a new episode.